We have three guest speakers today. Each of them will talk about a passage through life in our adult years. I will introduce each of them individually. David Namark will begin our journey together with his personal story about reflection.
Good morning. Welcome. Approaching age 50, looking in the mirror every morning, and what do I see? Somewhat scary, not recognizing the person as much as I think I used to, not just in terms of the things that I think, but also certainly in terms of the way that I look. The hair getting whiter and whiter, the face dropping further and further. Along those lines, I'll take this opportunity to put in a plug for June 16th, our pastoral care transition program on aging. I'll be in active attendance at that point. That'll be from 6:30 to 8 on a Monday, by the way. 2013 was, depending on how one thinks about it or how I think about it, either the toughest year of my life or the worst year of my life or the most difficult year of my life. For the first time, I began to have some declines in my health. My career was becoming somewhat unsatisfying, even though I'm in a helping profession. I'm a psychiatrist. I was beginning to lose track of why I was doing what I was doing. My marriage was running into difficulties and was unstable. And I was having trouble with my kids, who seemed to not be paying much attention to me and not really respecting me very much. I tried to weigh up what was going on. I thought maybe it was merely a midlife crisis, but I decided it was probably too simplistic of an answer. And as this all came together, a series of events happened where I really had no choice but to reach out to family, to my friends, some friends that I hadn't seen in a long period of time, and as well to the fellowship. And in fact, that's what led me to join the fellowship almost a year ago. I've never been a person who particularly liked to admit that I needed help, but I needed it last year, and I think I still need it on some level. On the bright side, 2014 has been much, much, much better. By reaching out to these groups, friends, family, getting help, I realized that I also needed to give back in a way that I wasn't giving back in my life, and that giving back would also be something that would help me to feel better. And I think I've been able to accomplish some of that feeling of giving back through some things that have happened with friends and through some of the work that I've been honored to do with the Pastoral Care Committee. I now feel engaged in my life again. My health has stabilized. My career has become much more satisfying. My marriage has improved. And my kids now seem occasionally wanting to listen to me. Although, as my friend who's visiting me now from New York said last night, never underestimate the profound clarifying effect of a few good beatings. And I'm just joking, 100%. I would never, ever. Anybody who knows me, I'm extremely gentle and would never touch my kids other than to hug them. But I just like that line. And to finish off, what have I learned in my reflection over this last year? No shame in asking for help, potentially a lot of reward in helping. I definitely see now why it is said that at the end of life, most people don't regret making more money, but they sure do regret not having spent more time with friends. And finally, in the words of a poet whose name I don't recall, but I do think it was a poet because I know that I didn't come up with it myself, and it sounds fairly poetic to me. These are the moments of our life. Everything that has passed is gone, and everything that follows is not here yet. There's only now, these moments.
Lisa Schaefer will take us further on our journey with her description of transition.
Good morning. Life is full of transitions. When we're young, these transitions typically relate to growth and advancement. But as we enter the second half of our lives, the transitions more often stem from loss. My first husband, to whom I was married for 22 years and with whom I raised my beloved daughter, Allison, died of cancer at age 61, less than a year after he was first diagnosed. Dying at age 61, when a year earlier he had been active and healthy, working, traveling, and doing all the things we do at that age, was a real shock. This could be me. This could be my current husband, Steve. This could be any of my contemporaries. This loss was a message for me and about me and what I wanted for the rest of my life. His death really was the proverbial wake-up call. Here I was, working hard, going to school, but feeling stressed, not living a joy-filled life. But I had enough money. I was in good health. I had a nice house, a loving husband, and yet I too could be dead a year from now. This was a turning point for me, a transition from feeling invulnerable to an awareness of my mortality. Steve and I started talking about bucket lists, and I started making some life changes. I accepted a different work situation that had less stress, even though it meant less status and less pay. Who cares? I've been important. Now I want to be happy. We went to England on a Winnie the Pooh pilgrimage that I had been thinking about since I clipped an article in 1992 out of the New York Times travel section. No more waiting until later for us. And I started trying to respond to new opportunities by saying, probably, or why not, instead of, no, not now. Then 2 years ago, one day before his 97th birthday, my father died. He was the last of the older generation in my family. My mother and all my aunts and uncles had already gone. My father's death was a loss, of course, but at age 97, when he had told us he was ready and when he had lived as full a life as he wanted, it was not tragic. The impact on me was partly the typical challenge of resolving how had I been as a daughter, how had he been as a father, and I think I did a reasonably good job of working through that. I certainly had a long time to prepare. But the real impact was when I realized that my brothers and I are now the oldest generation. That was a really big idea for me to absorb. There are no elders for me to turn to. All my life I've known that if something went bad, if something bad happened, if I became ill, if I needed money, my parents would be there for me. Fortunately, I never needed it, but I always knew that safety net was there. So now, it's all done. Everyone's gone. All the estates are settled. Whatever I was supposed to learn, I learned, or not. Whatever advice or financial help I was going to get, I've gotten. The buck stops here. I understand that this is the natural cycle of life, and I couldn't change it if I wanted to. But it's a milestone marker on my life's journey. And in some ways, it was this transition that finally made me feel like a grown-up. The transition also changed my relationship to the generation below me. I can't pass them on to their grandparents anymore if they have questions. I am responsible for preserving and passing on the family history, the stories, the traditions. I sure wish I had paid more attention. And I wonder what my kids will remember and pass along when I'm gone. As I consider these life transitions, it makes me even more grateful to have this fellowship, this community as my support network. You are all my family. You're my safety net in case I need you. Thank you for being here for me. May we all appreciate and embrace the people in our lives at all ages and stages and live our lives fully so that we're prepared for whatever lies ahead.
Thank you, Lisa. Jill Ballard brings us through our passage with her comments about rebirth.
Good morning. There's a cartoon image that has stuck with me for many years. It's a picture of a very old man hunched over his cane, and the caption reads, "It was hell," said the former child. It wasn't all hell, but it had its moments for sure. I also remember as a child, when I was experiencing some of those moments, my mother would say, "You're just going through a stage," until finally one day I very indignantly replied, "I am not going through a stage. I am living my life." So now, many years later, I read about the stages of life and I see myself in them. As disconcerting as it is to know that I am not an original, it is also comforting in a way, and I think the reason why we are talking about this today. I worked as a registered nurse for 37 years and as a nurse practitioner for the last 19 of them. I worked in many settings, an inner city hospital in the Boston ghetto, intensive care unit, home care for AIDS and cancer patients, an internal medicine practice, and most recently at the Student Health Services on the UCSD campus. I've been a supervisor and a manager for at least half of all those years. I'm retiring in 9 days. My career was everything to me. I didn't have children. I worked long and stressful hours and often put my own health and relationships last. I paid a price for that. The past couple of years, I realized I needed to pay more attention to other parts of myself, and I've gradually cut back my work hours and handed over responsibilities to other people. It's weird, in a way, because I already see myself as redundant in my job, and though it's a tad bittersweet, it's a good thing, and I see that I've left my mark and others can carry on. I chose my career for lots of good reasons. I had a fascination with medicine and a desire to help people, but there were lots of pathological ones as well. Being a caretaker and a problem solver has its dark side, as I'm sure my husband could tell you. Nursing and medicine can be incredibly stressful, and I'm not one of those people who stress brings out the best in. Although I felt satisfaction and mastery of many aspects, I was not always the person I wish I had been. The task was important, and the people, including myself, were sometimes less so. But is what you do really who you are? Who will I be when I'm not doing what I've been doing for the last 37 years? Will I cease to be me? Being busy can be an addiction, and it has kept me distracted from some more scary things. I'm not talking about skydiving, I would never do that, but being in a loving relationship with myself and the world around me. Now I feel a sense of adventure in pursuing just that. I read a bit of Gail Shee's new passages as I was thinking about this service, and she talked about the priorities of people in their later years. She said they were creativity, increasing depth of relationships, play and having fun, and self-care. I couldn't believe my eyes as I read this because they were the exact same things I had written down for myself as goals in my post-retirement years. Being a list maker, I have a long list of what I would like to do when I retire. It include meditation, yoga, music, cooking, reading, travel, art, photography, making jewelry, spending time with old and new friends. But mostly I'm looking forward to just being and not being defined by what I do. I feel incredibly lucky to have this opportunity, and rebirth is exactly the term I would use to describe it. Gail Shee also described the years of later adulthood as the age of integrity. She writes, they provide the chance for coalescence of all that has been lived and learned, and a period of grace and generosity. If that is what I have to look forward to, all I can say is, wow, bring it on.
Let's give all three of them a round of applause.